Welcome to the Catbird Speaks. We are back from the dead and doing another podcast for the first time since I think Reinsdorf took over the team. I think the trio we have tonight is the three TCS writers most likely to get into an ugly Twitter beef. joining me in Manhattan is Nick Schaefer.
Hey. I want to point out that now that it's 2016, it's been like 7 years on Twitter and still no profanity.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Unless you count like damn.
I wouldn't even like realize that was something you were doing on purpose.
Yeah, no, I've passed up a lot of really, really awesome tweets for that reason.
I'm trying to see how long it's been since I swore.
I've been doing it more, if anything.
Well, you know. As the
James, you haven't introduced me yet.
In Madison, Wisconsin.
No.
What?
Still home.
Oh, in Glen.
You remember in college where you get like 6 weeks off,
so
Glenview.
The professors can still grade your exams like a week after you get back to school.
My grades have been in since December 23rd.
Oh, good for the University of Wisconsin. That wasn't what my professor said.
Well, he's a stats major, so it might be different.
Just run the Scantron through.
I don't know what your classes are like. Joining us in Glenview is Ethan Spaulding.
My last score 12 hour or at 8:36 a.m. and it's 9:08 p.m. as we're recording.
Did I say tonight?
What?
What are we talking about?
Oh,
I was swearing. My tweeting.
Oh.
This is a fantastic start to this podcast.
I'm enjoying it.
I didn't swear on Twitter for the longest, and then Mark Tian hit like a 3-run homer in the 9th inning to tie a game after I totally gave up on him as a player, and I was drunk in the bleachers, and I just tweeted like, un-fucking-leavable! So that was totally worth it.
Dude. I could probably find that because he hit what, like 6 home runs at the White Sox? Oh, I'm sorry, he hit 7.
Wasn't he there for 2 years?
Yeah, I think it was the second year. I'm James Fegan in Elkhart, Indiana, under contract to be here. That's a separate matter. The White Sox offseason just kind of keeps dragging along, and we've been waiting for like a major move to do a podcast and reaction of.
We skipped the first two major moves and didn't do a podcast.
Well, I meant like a major free agent signing. I'm not doing a podcast until Jerry spends some money, and he hasn't yet.
No, I mean, go ahead.
Those trades were major, but we wrote about them.
Yes.
They've been discussed.
It's more like we don't do a podcast that regularly.
Oh, we did a roundtable too. It went really long. Like, it's a lot easier to listen to a podcast than have to read like 10 word document pages worth of our writing, which is what our roundtables are.
You heard it here first. Reading is hard. No, you're right. It's just walking around, commuting, and whatnot. Anyway, for a while, I was getting really, really upset at their inaction, especially I don't know if I would have been as upset about the inaction if all those reports weren't leaking about like the really dumb arbitrary lines in the sand, like cheap lines in the sand the White Sox were drawing and they're negotiating. Obviously Hayward went first and I never really considered them as serious candidates for him. But other than that, Alex Gordon's the only real chip.
There's been a bunch of
second tier guys, but
Everyone's like, oh, this guy will be the domino that'll start the rest of the dominoes to fall. And it's like, oh, Zobrist will be that guy. Zobrist signs, nothing happens till Alex Gordon signs, which is like a month and a half later. And now nothing's happened to Alex Gordon. So at this rate, Justin Upton's going to sign like right before spring training, and Jonas Cespedes is going to sign like right before the draft or something like that.
So like that's what's weird is Span did go right after Gordon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But And then also the Revere trade, I guess, is the most recent one. So it is interesting that Upton and Cespedes are still both out there. And it doesn't seem like the White Sox are alone in this sort of rift between what those players presumably are asking for and what the league has collectively decided they're worth. Because the White Sox aren't the only ones where people thought this team's looking for an outfielder. and these two guys are just sitting out there and nothing happened. In fact, the Giants, a team that are, you know, putting the money in there to make sure they keep their even year magic going, and they presumably threw up their hands and went for plan B. Like, they just said, screw it. Like, it's not worth it. We'll just bring it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, is Chris Davis holding back the market? Because what people have been saying is that the Orioles have been wanting to, like, look at Upton if they don't sign Chris Davis, but the Orioles are the only team that makes sense for Chris Davis because no one else is giving that money to a first baseman because no one needs a first baseman right now other than, like, the Pirates who won't spend money.
I've never seen any other – I haven't even seen any other names connected to Chris Davis. It's only
– it was like the Orioles offered this massive contract, although it was like $5,150.
And then they took it off the table, and now apparently it's back out there.
It was $6,150, like something crazy like that. And it was – then they're like, oh – and then Davis rejected it for some reason. And then what makes it all more bizarre is that that offer was there for Davis, that – enormous, like, very evident of inflation offer to Davis, because Davis is a really good player, but $6,150 to him is, like, insane. That's like the Ryan Howard contract plus inflation. And then,
although actually on the free agent market as opposed to
right, I mean, yeah.
Point taken, very fair point.
And then you get these reports that, oh, the White Sox won't go past 3 years for Justin Upton and Yoenis Cespedes. The Tigers would be there if Yoenis Cespedes' demands went down to 3 years. Like, why are these markets? I don't get why the markets aren't developing for these guys. Justin Upton is a 28-year-old player who's basically been like a 3 to 4 to 5 win player every year, a well above average hitter with not bad right field defense, who provides legit power and somewhere else other than Petco's death to flying things ballpark, like, probably is a very real threat to hit 35 bombs. And he's 28 years old, and he's not, there's no market for him at high money, apparently. Yoenis Cespedes was a 6-win player last year and was in the MVP conversation for half a season.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so weird, like, because all the knocks on Justin Upton, you can make on Chris Davis like times 1,000. If you say, well, you know, Upton's had some like down years, like 2014, Chris Davis was like bad. It's like, well, maybe Justin Upton's defense isn't great. It's like, yeah, but like Chris Davis is a first baseman. Like, who cares? Like, you know, all of the knocks on Justin Upton. If Chris Davis is worth $150 million and he's confident enough to reject it, when there's no other bidders that have even been identified, I mean, what's he holding out for? Like, the Orioles to go, okay, we'll go to 155? Like, what's he looking for? Is he waiting for the Prince Fielder thing to happen?
Right, and that stuff is there with Chris Davis, and people are like, oh, yeah, well, maybe if Justin Upton takes a one-year deal. Justin Upton isn't Adrian Beltre coming off the Mariners debacle. Like, Justin Upton hit 28 home runs last year in Petco. 26. Okay.
Only because I had his page open while you were talking about him.
Yeah, because who actually pays any attention to the Padres, even though they tried to make you pay attention to them?
He had a perfectly normal Justin Upton year.
Right. And if you consider the fact that he was for the first time hitting in a major pitcher's park,
he also randomly cratered against lefties last year,
but murdered righties with furious abandon.
Single-year platoon splits are, like, not, you
completely
know,
useless.
Yeah, so, but it's just interesting that, like, okay, if you're saying, why did Justin Upton have a down year last year? Maybe he had some weird aberration against lefties, and I don't know.
He didn't really have a down year.
No, he was 20% above league average, and he had 19 stolen bases. That would have led the White Sox. How many did Eaton have last year?
That. For what it's worth, Upton also finished like in the finalists for a Gold Glove.
Who's driving the 150 mil offer from the Orioles? Because they're bidding against themselves, aren't they?
Like, the teams that make sense for Davis are, well, if the Cardinals are convinced that Matt Adams is like pulled all his fat muscles or whatever it is, and he can't work at first base anymore, like the Cardinals make sense, but who really even makes sense for that? The Pirates could really use a first baseman.
But they would never do that.
They would never do that.
Why would the Pirates spend $150 million on Chris Davis when they just cut Pedro Alvarez?
Right, right. The Pirates, like, they wouldn't do that. The Blue Jays are, with Encarnacion, a free agent next year, they make sense because they had Chris Colabello and made him kind of work for a little bit. But the Blue Jays just got mad at Alex Anthopoulos and basically fired him because he was actually tried to win games. So I doubt they're spending money on Chris Davis.
Why was he offering even $150 million in the first place? Was that in response to Jason Hayward? Was that, okay, here's where the position player market is? Because Hayward's looking like an aberration right now.
Well, he also is an aberration.
He is an aberration.
He's a 25-year-old free agent, which makes him completely different than anyone else. But I guess the only way that the Chris Davis market makes any sense at all is if you're pushing him as a left or a right fielder, which apparently is what Boris is doing. But
no,
who the hell is
giving... No, thanks.
Yeah, who's giving him that money to be a left or a right fielder, even if it's only going to be a year?
Especially when Cespedes and Upton are out there, I would have to imagine that they would take that deal in a heartbeat at this point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what I could see kind of making sense with that left or right field idea with Davis is a team like the Nationals. And yes, this is going to make a historically hilariously bad defense in the outfield. But it seemed like the Nationals throws him in left and tries to hide him there for a bit until he moves to first because Ryan Zimmerman gets suspended for HGH or whatever.
Is this the Nationals putting Revere in center, or is this the Nationals putting Jason Wirth's hairy corpse?
I forgot. I did forget that they got Revere because I was going to suggest center.
Revere and Harper could probably hide Davis.
Yeah, but then what do you do with Jason Wirth?
Bury him, I guess.
I'd bury Zimmerman before I buried Wirth.
Well, I guess then you probably just put Davis at first.
Yeah, that's true. And you do have Michael Taylor as a defensive replacement too.
I guess with the Revere trade, which I kind of forgot happened, you probably don't have as much of a fit there anymore, even if you never really did have a fit.
I mean, the Revere trade is significant because the Nationals basically bowed out of the outfield market.
Right. They bowed out. The Giants bowed out.
They declared themselves out. They just wanted Hayward.
Right, and I still think I wouldn't rule them out for Upton because that seems like something they'd sneak up on.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Tommy Pham, though.
Well, they got Piscotty and they got... Yep.
Grichuk and...
Grichuk and Holiday.
Yep.
So
I just like Tommy Pham.
Unless they're moving Holiday to first, they're kind of stuck. But I guess it's like the Tigers and the White Sox, and I don't know.
I felt like I was feeling around in the dark on the post today, but I was trying to figure out who would actually be in this outfield market at this point.
Well,
right, Cafardo had a piece where he linked the Red Sox there, which sounds like Cafardo getting fed by the agent of Boris, the agent of Upton, that basically hey, the Red Sox, maybe they should be in on this, so let's drive up the price. Because why the hell would the Red Sox sign Justin Upton when they have... I mean, they're all bad. Because
they realize they don't want to play Rusney Castillo.
And Jackie Bradley Jr. Although, no, I thought the Red Sox had more outfielders than they did. I think it looks like they've kind of... With Hanley not there anymore in the outfield anymore. And they've cleared out some of the log jam. But, yeah, Matt, James, when I was making my contribution to the piece today, and just looking at... Bruce Levine's thing about here's the potential fits for even a guy like Dexter Fowler, who, you would think that a guy who can play center pretty well would have a broader market than teams just looking for a corner outfielder. And even that, the market's not great. So for all that I wanted to assume, I wanted to roll my eyes at the White Sox for the 3 years. Granted, I think they shouldn't be playing with fire right now and should just look, dude, just lock up Upton for 5 years. Who cares? It's not like you're signing up for ages. I mean, 5 years from now, Justin Upton is going to be 33, 34. Who cares?
He's with the rest of the core. He's the same age as Jose Abreu.
Yeah, just do it. But if they're trying to make sure that they optimize the deal, they're not necessarily that far off from it, which is also crazy because, you know, if they're saying we only want to go to three and then they're going to, you know, concede and go to four and maybe 4 years gets it done. You could make a not crazy argument. If you're the team negotiating against the free agent, you could say, look, Alex Gordon is better than you and he only got 4 years. And then the argument becomes, well, is he better than them? He's older, et cetera. But it's an argument. It's a negotiating thing you could do with a straight face.
My level Gordon of fan really... frustration is such that I thought it might be a good idea for a second to respond to your point with optimize my balls as a counter.
Because... Yeah, you know where I stand.
But, I mean, also, like, what confuses me is, like, yeah, maybe pitching is valuable, but Jack Greinke got $210 million for 6 years, and you're saying that Justin Upton at 28 years old can't get a four-year deal?
Like, yeah, and any pitcher at any time, their shoulder could just explode and they could never be good again. Like, look at John Danks. John Danks isn't as good as Zach Greinke or whatever, but, like, Danks didn't have an injury history, did he?
No, there was one of those every year there's, like, various models that try and predict future pitcher injuries, and I'm pretty sure John Danks, the year he got hurt, was the least likely pitcher in baseball to get hurt. And I'm pretty sure the least likely pitcher to get hurt in baseball right now is Jose Quintana, for what it's worth, by one of those models.
Oh, God. Also...
It's a lot like, for that.
It seems a little crazy to me that because people have even been talking, like the Rangers have been linked to like 1 year deals for these guys, as have Detroit, I think, was linked to one of those. Upton, I still think it's crazy, but Upton, you could at least be like, well, maybe he wants to like shed the comp pick thing, or maybe he wants to be outside of Petco for his
contract. Right. Like you can see Upton going to the cell and hitting 36, 37 bombs and in front of Abreu.
I'm 29 now. I'm not in Petco. Look what I can do. It's all great. Cespedes, though, like, he's like, what? What? People have mentioned him for a 1 year make good deal. And it's like,
he just did that.
Yeah. Like, what the? He's not doing better.
He's coming
he just
off
peaked in the contract year. He's not going to try to, like,
and he got traded. There's
peak in the contract year.
There's no comp pick either. Like, what could possibly be better for Cespedes?
The argument is, oh, well, the market will be softer next year, which are teams that stupid? Well, like,
maybe if he publishes a book next season, some university will offer him tenure and that's what he's shooting for.
Like, I just can't imagine the market is so weird that like, oh, Yoenis Cespedes is the only free agent out here. So this time when he's a year older and now coming off two great years, we're going to give him twice as much money as he would have last year. Like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, he's going to be 31 after next year.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, I don't understand anything about this outfield market. Like, because at the beginning of the offseason, everyone was talking about, oh, this is going to be the most explosive offseason for player contracts ever. And it looked like it was with the Price contract and especially the Greinke contract. And then Hayward gets a ton of money, and obviously he's 25. But Upton's 28. Upton is, other than A-Rod, and assuming Upton gets a $100 million deal, other than A-Rod and Hayward, Upton is going to be the youngest person ever to get a $100 million deal, free position player in free agency.
How old was Carlos Beltran?
I think he was younger than, I think he was older than what Upton is right now, but I don't think it was by not much. Either the same age.
And, like, by the way, Beltran is, like, maybe the best $100 million-plus dollar deal, like, of all time.
Yeah, that too. But,
while we're talking about this.
Beltran was also a lot cooler than Justin Upton going into free agency.
I know, but it's one of those things where people always say, oh, these big contracts don't work out. And it's like, sometimes they do.
Carlos Beltran was so good.
I'm already getting angry for when he won't get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I feel like the concept of a big free agent contract working out is kind of flawed because, like, the idea of a big free agent contract is not that you're going to get, like, perfect fair value for every year of the deal. I mean,
right, you
win come to free agency because you have, like, a bad situation you need to spend to fix.
And also, there's no such thing as fair – like, all these calculations, it's like they're forgetting, yes, like, values are artificially deflated the first 6 years in the league, and then they, like – swing the other way once they become a free agent due to their age curve and like all that stuff. And you save money on the cost control guys, and then you spend those savings on pieces to fill out the rest of your roster in free agency.
Exactly. And the White Sox are in the perfect situation to do that, because you get Justin Upton, who there's no reason why in the next 2 years Justin Upton is going to be bad, except for the fact that the White Sox, if they sign someone, they turn to shit always. But other than that, the White Sox have, over the next 2 years, basically a golden window, because now that they have Frazier and Lurie under contract, they have a really, really strong core between...
The biggest hole on their roster is...
Shortstop.
I think Saladino and Sanchez are better than Aviso because they can at least like scrape field by defensively.
And they can field their position, and it's a higher on the spectrum defensive position.
Exactly. But it's so incredible that like they pulled off these like really cool deals that don't cost that much and didn't cost so much in talent to fix third base and second base. They fixed third base and second base for like maybe a good closer and maybe like a solid outfielder. Maybe.
Chris
like
Young.
High risk, high beta. Yeah, exactly.
Present Chris Young, not Chris Young when he was actually really good with the Diamondbacks, but when he was like with the Yankees, when he was super, super good as half of a platoon.
Yeah, like that's the worst case scenario. They fixed the two of the biggest problems with the roster. And then you're telling me you have this like historic glut at right field, where it's your biggest position of weakness on the market, and all of the biggest bidders aren't in. Like, this is crazy. This is such a windfall.
And Justin Upton fits perfectly with where the core is right now. He's the same age as your best position player.
It's like watching a 4-year-old with like trying to hit a pinata. It's like, just whack it with the stick, man, and all your dreams are coming true. It's right there, man. It's right there. And then you take the blindfold off, and they still suck at it because they're 4. And just hit the thing.
I mean, maybe they see that like window and they don't see other bidders, and they just think they can just wait these guys out.
It just
claim to fame when he got promoted was that he's supposed to be like the contract negotiator for the team.
So he signed Jeff Kepinger to a great deal, and he got real good money on Melky Cabrera. And I don't even know.
It's just so weird that you can have like
so much for that positivity.
Man, like we have this amazing sports car, and we just only need like this one car part. Hey, look right across the street, discount amazing that car part only store. I don't need to shop there. It's like, what are you talking about?
Or maybe he shops there and just then goes and tries the other 30 stores in the city.
No, he buys like a couple packs of gum and like gives the guy a thumbs up on his way out.
Yeah, but and also like let's just think about how much better they'll be if they have Upton. Last year they had Jose Abreu hit 30 home runs. Their second leading home run hitter was Adam fucking Eaton with 14 fucking home runs. And like little tiny little skinny Adam Eaton leadoff hitter hit 14 home runs, second on the team. They will have added Frazier, who hit 35 last year, Lurie, who hit 18 last year, and Upton, who hit 28 last year or 26 last year in San Diego. Like there, it's very conceivable that those three guys who are upgrading over literal horseshit playing baseball, combined for what, 80 home runs in 2016? Yeah, plus you got Abreu, and if Lurie holds his game, like you got a really
80's got them each pegged at like what, 26, 27? I mean, if any of them goes up, like that's a conservative. I mean, I hate to say, 80 home runs is conservative with those three players, but like Justin Upton can do better than that. Frazier can do better than that, and has done better than that. And Lurie next year is going to be 26. Like, I don't want to just do – I do think it's a big pitfall that people fall into. We've talked about this where it's like, oh, well, he's young, so he'll automatically get better. But it's not crazy to think that a 26-year-old can get better who was, like, a good prospect, like a good hitting prospect.
That's what's really nice with the Lurie trade, and we haven't really talked about it on a podcast yet somehow, is that –
Shade.
I have to say, like, somehow we managed to not podcast since the beginning of the winter meetings. But he is, if he is what he was last year, with better defense, because he's going to be at one position, he's not going to be flanked by Marcus Simeon's iron glove. You've got a guy who's a really big upgrade, a very solid hitter, and, like, just a nice piece to have at second base. Like, that's fine. If he is even close to what his prospect shine was, like, you got a really good player for really cheap. And
yeah, and you took a fourth-round pick from this year and the fourth piece, the third or fourth piece you got from the PV deal.
And then you got Frazier, who in the last 3 years has had better year. Each of his last 3 years are better than, like, are better by an order of magnitude than, like, any post-Creedy White Sox third baseman year. Like,
well, what's also interesting, too, about that whole those two trades in tandem is, like, Laurie went from, like, a glove-first upgrade at third base to, like, a bat-first upgrade at second base in, like, a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's where his value is going to come from, at second base as opposed to third base. But, like, either way, also, like, that versatility is, like, let's say Frazier gets injured. You shift Laurie over to third, and you have Sanchez at second base. Like, that's the type of depth that they, like, haven't had in my life. Like, I don't, you know, like, the idea of having, like, a plan B if somebody got hurt.
Other than shortstop, like, the infield's really good. And, like, not just like, good for White Sox standards, which is nothing. Like, the infield's good. Like, that, you have one of the best offensive players in the game at first base. You have a good defensive third baseman who also is probably one of the better offensive third basemen in baseball. You have a second baseman who is at least solid.
He's an above-average hitter at second base and probably a below-average fielder there, but with upside.
Right, and, like, he's definitely looked like he's got defensive skills, but he's scuffled in the past defensively at times. But, and then you got whatever you have in shortstop. It's a black hole, but you're not going to fix that shortstop with anything on the free agent market unless you really like Ian Desmond enough to get a comp pick.
Alexi Ramirez.
I mean, you could...
Alexi Ramirez
can't be the biggest thing you do for the rest of the offseason, though.
No, I
but
guess
even
not.
If you brought him back, like, that team all of a sudden is... I mean, right now, I think... I mean, huge grain of salt with everything I'm about to say. Huge grain of Laurie's, I guess, with what I'm about to say. I'm trying to learn this Midwest. The White Sox has constituted, I think, Steamer or whatever has them as, like, an 81-81 team right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, without, you know, doing anything else the rest of this offseason. So, I mean, like, if you added Alexi to this team as it stands and they get some good breaks, not the whole, like, you know, cross your fingers and hope you get your 90th percentile, like, some, you know, solid breaks and, like, you're right there and you add at the wild card or at the trade deadline and then you're, like, a legit playoff contender, even without doing anything else.
I mean, you're the Mets.
Yeah, yeah. And let's say you add at, I don't know, what if they added, like, a Dexter Fowler? I don't know why they would do that instead of Upton or Cespedes, but let's say they did. Even then,
I do like the defensive value there. I think that, because then you got a really nice defensive outfield.
And then you're, like, what, an 80, compared to Avisaíl last year, if you just take 81-81 at face value, you'd be at, what, like, an 84-win team, probably?
Yeah, and with a Rodon jump, you're, like, you're a division winner.
Mm.
Like, no.
And if you're in it, the White Sox do have a track record of adding at the deadline if they are in it. I mean, to varying degrees. But
yeah, but we'll definitely get Jerry saying, well, we're playing well, but the fans aren't out here.
Well, you won't get Jerry saying that because he gets people under him to say that. He doesn't make statements to the media very often at all.
That's true.
He gets Han to tell them how aggressive he is. They have to hold him back. Because Rick Han, the GM, who's trying to make a name for himself, has Jerry Reinsdorf saying, please, buy all these free agents. And Han says, no.
Rick Han.
I'm doing it the hard way, Jerry.
if Rick Hahn signs Justin Upton, there's a non-zero chance that he goes from taking over a team that had the third worst record in baseball and the worst farm system in baseball to a division champion in 3 years. Like, that's a hell of a job.
But given the recent ascension of Mark Shapiro and Freeman Zahadi in the Dodgers, like going to, you know, saying, hey, wait a minute, you have all the money in the world, but what if I ran you guys cheaply and still did okay? What if Hahn has realized, wait a minute, I need to run teams cheaply and be okay, and then I'll run the Yankees in a couple
but
of years.
But now the Dodgers are, they got Anthopoulos, so.
What, oh, he's like special assistant to the GM special assistant or something.
Is he going to, like, bring his mafia people and beat up the Dodgers ownership if they don't spend more money?
He's like, got a – he's still – I mean, it's American dollars now.
Isn't the dollar a lot stronger right now than the Canadian dollar?
I think that's been the bulk of the history of the two nations, really.
Yeah.
So is
we
that
could do, we could do tax analysis. We could talk about the different
oh,
places
God.
Justin
Ooh,
Upton
tax
sign.
Analysis.
The different places where Justin Upton is signed. Oh, it would be more appealing for him to sign with the Rangers because they have a lower income tax. Fucking
I mean, why the Rangers were linked to Upton as like a 1 year deal, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's less crazy to me than the Cespedes thing.
Well, yeah.
But
Cespedes,
oh, good
not
news, by the way. Jane promised that if she won the Powerball, she'd buy me the White Sox. So
I promised if I won it myself, I'd buy myself the White Sox. I haven't bought the ticket.
Though. Well, if you and Jane enter into like some sort of joint ticket buying agreement, then it might get a little awkward. But you know, other than that,
I don't like how is there not a 6-1-30 or 6-1-40 even offer out there to Upton. Or not to Cespedes.
But given the way the market's shaking out, like theoretically, couldn't you come in with like 5-1-10 and win? Like, is anyone else beating that offer?
If you get either of those two guys for 5-1-10, you signed a hell of a contract, especially Upton. Because I
agree, but like, wouldn't that be the best market offer out there right now from what we're hearing?
Maybe it's such a weird market right now that maybe like we just maybe when all this talk of well maybe they'll take 3 years is because their requests for annual salaries are really high right now. Like what if Upton's like, oh, I'll consider a 2 year contract if you sign me to 2 years $58 million or something like that. I'd do 2 years $58 million for Justin Upton.
I mean, that's basically gets you back to, like, the opt-out, but except the 2 years gets you out of the risk and you can plan accordingly. Because the opt-outs are I'm kind of glad the White Sox haven't really gone down that road at all. I the three-year, to me, it doesn't make sense for...
You mean opt-outs aren't good for the team?
It's crazy. I know.
It's the most asinine, like... Cheers. Jason Hayward has an opt-out after 3 years. There is no situation where that's good for the Cubs. They either lose a good trade chip if they're set on not keeping Jason Hayward. They either lose a good trade chip or they're screwed and stuck with a dead-ass contract. Like it's
or,
just,
like, I heard somebody say...
like tossing
that,
a grenade in the crowded room.
That the two scenarios for Johnny Cueto are... either the Giants get two great years out of him and then he opts out, or you get 6 years of Johnny Cueto, which is also great. And it's like, and then they muttered, or they get hurt and he gets hurt. And he's like, yeah, dude, what if Cueto like tears his rotator cuff tomorrow? You have him for 6 years and he's useless.
Right. It's a 2 year contract with enormous insurance policy for the player. Basically
it's all the risk is on the organization.
Right. Like I think the ideal situation for the organization is that those 2 years, like they definitely have a little bit of a rooting interest if, given that those 2 years happen, that the opt out happens because then they get the good years and not the bad years.
Yes.
But they but when you're signing the contract, you're basically committing $200 million with no risk to the player. Like the player could completely tank. And the team assumes all the risk. Which yep. So yeah, that's the opt-out rant. That I don't understand how anyone could have a different position than that. But
like, I don't know why 3 years is the number that they would settle on. I guess Upton in 3 years could like, let's say he signed a 3-year deal with a really high AAV. So I guess he'd be coming back on the market at 31, and he figures he can get one more long contract and get some good, like better dollar values on his age, you know, 36 and 37 seasons, better than he can get right now. I guess that would be his plan. Like, Cespedes, I do not get why he would want to come back onto the market at age 33 compared to, like, his bargaining power right now. That's what's weird to me. Like, I would think that Cespedes would either want to, like, that Cespedes would want his long deal now, and Upton would either want, I guess Upton, maybe you could talk into a 3-year deal, but he would either want, like, a 1-year out of Petco thing to rebuild his value. Otherwise, he would want the longest deal he could get. That's what I would think. Although I suppose re-entering the market as a free agent at age 35 isn't as, or 34 isn't as nice as at 31 in
what
some respects.
Like, what I think makes sense for Upton is he gets a lower total deal than he may, than like a similar case would have gotten 4 years ago relative to inflation, but he gets that after 1 or after 2 year opt out. Like, I think the opt out actually does end up making a lot of sense with the Upton contract, because you could entice him with the guaranteed money, but also entice him with the ability to opt out. And that's why teams are doing opt outs, is not because they're beneficial to the team.
No, it's a bargaining. Because
it's a bargaining chip, and it's a nice bargaining chip, because it, for a guy like Upton who's young, for a guy, especially a guy like Hayward, who if he is as good as he thinks he's going to be, he's going to be $70 million richer and then sign a massive fucking contract in 2018. There's no way Jason Hayward stays, unless things go horribly wrong. There's no more way Jason Hayward stays more than 3 years in Chicago. But
his bat's been like, is so weird.
That's true.
His bat is so weird. And I'm just looking
at Adam Eaton's bat. He's the exact same offensive player as Adam Eaton.
But exactly. He's been with
literally exactly. It's insane.
He did have that. I mean, his age was, he was 21. Jeez, he was only 21. His 21, age 21 season was terrible. But yeah, no, he's Adam Eaton.
Wasn't his age 20 season really, really good though?
His age 20 season is his best season.
Right.
And is that his rookie season?
His rookie season.
I really hope my age 20 year is not my best year, because it's been a good year. It hasn't been a best year kind of thing.
Bad news, Ethan.
Well, I mean, so I guess there's part of me thinking too, like, assuming that a guy's, like, on the one hand, the Cardinals were really bidding hard on him, so they must have believed that he would keep us up. On the other hand, if an 800 OPS is the best he can do with the Cardinals, then I'm, like, a little worried, because I feel like the Cardinals max out their hitters so well. I wonder if Upton really wants an opt-out. Couldn't you see? Because Reinsdorf draws these. The reason I disproportionately freaked out at that 3-year deal rumor that was floating around
is
that
Jerry's a fucking weirdo.
He draws these arbitrary lines of what he will and will not do, even if it makes like sense financially. He just won't do it as a matter of principle.
We talked about
the draft for pitchers. Up until John Danks, he refused to go more than 3 years on any pitcher ever.
They went four on Burley.
Yeah, but they're like the ton of drama before that happened.
I thought I watched his last start because everyone thought he was
going
to go to the Red Sox.
There was a long era when you were like in preschool, like around there, where Ethan, where like, not you, James, where the White Sox just had this policy where they would do 3-year deals and that was it for like everyone. It was like Contreras, Garcia, Vasquez. Like, it was just all the three-year deals. That was what they were about.
Would they go on Jamie Navarro?
Oh, God. I think that's why.
Isn't that their last big free agent pitching signing?
I think that's why they only go 3 years on
it. That's not a bad reason.
And, like, pitchers, I get it way more than position players.
Especially because you're the White Sox and you just churn out Jose Quintanas from minor league free agent signings.
Yeah, and you can protect yourself from a lot of, like, really bad deals if you just go for 3 years with pitchers. But, with, like, it's just, it seems like this golden opportunity, and if they just don't, and it looks like it's getting even better, and if they just wait it out to save, like, a couple extra percentage points at the margins, I'll be very sad. But that is something where they do draw these, they make these arbitrary constraints on themselves.
Jerry does.
Right. And it's a drag. I hope that that's not what's happening here.
Because he has these goals for what he wants, like, the free agent market or the draft market to, like, take shape, like, as on a large, like, league scale.
I mean,
and he's willing to, like, let his team twist in the wind for, like, this totally, like, fruitless pursuit. Because he's, like, he's not going to stop the tide of other teams.
Well, except for the CBA and the draft.
Well,
yeah, but even that was, like, more backroom arm twisting than, like, his public...
And he
sabotaging of his team's roster.
Or some of the other teams, like, followed in his wake. They, like, waited until the CBA changed. They weren't like, yeah, Jerry, we'll follow your lead of, like, sticking to the suggested slots on everything.
Yeah, but it wasn't like, they look at how I've built my shit-ass draft. Don't you want to, like, emulate that? And they were like, oh, yeah. Oh, my God. What were we doing?
But, and also, didn't he lose? Wasn't the report after Manfred took over as commissioner that he lost a lot of leverage, like a lot of people, a lot of those old white dudes who get mad at other old white dudes for doing weird things? Didn't they get mad at him for doing old white dude things?
Yeah, Ryan's a power grab that failed.
Yeah,
he tried to, like, back a different horse.
It was the major labor crusher versus the normal labor crusher commissioner that he tried to back and couldn't get it. And I think Seelig felt betrayed too.
And I think Reinsdorf made like a shot. You know, he was trying to pitch it as like even when it failed as like, you know, I was just trying to like, you know, warn Manfred, like, you know, this isn't unanimous or something, like. Shot across the bow. It's like, okay, Jerry, you're like a really impressive human being.
The league opted for somebody whose like mouth wouldn't like trickle blood of people he's killed like during public interviews when talking about crushing labor.
Which makes Jerry sad.
Because they want to actually have a chance to win quietly against the labor unions, which looks like it's coming closer to happening. And
is Reinsdorf Mr. Burns?
No, because he doesn't have that public persona of being an asshole. People, like,
Reinsdorf
like,
would never treat Smithers that way.
He's too loyal. But we're like the InfoWars people of Reinsdorf. We found out the chemtrails of Reinsdorf's public persona. But he's really no better than the worst people, like... Reinsdorf is like the chemtrails.
Like chopping up cocaine right now? Like, who's. There's like a pounding on a.
I'm playing with the spring thing in my headphones. Or my headphones have like a coily cord. Like old phones.
Sound like you're chopping up blow.
I've never done that.
Have you seen a movie? have you seen Scorsese?
But. I was saying that we're InfoWars. I'm Alex Jones exposing.
Why are you Alex Jones? Why can't I get to be Alex Jones?
I don't know.
I don't know anything about InfoWars other than when I was in rural New Hampshire, I saw a house with a banner for it on it. That's all I know.
That's actually my house.
You have a house in New Hampshire?
I don't know if I think I could point out New Hampshire on a map. It's either, yeah, it's the one next to Vermont, right?
Yes. oh, wait, the Bulls got crushed by the Wizards? Sorry, okay. We're all agreed that they should sign Upton, and if not, Cespedes. And it sounds like in this market, like, I wonder, you led the conversation, Ethan, it was saying, like, is Chris Davis holding...
The InfoWars?
Yeah, with the InfoWars. Is Chris Davis holding everything back? And that would never have occurred to me because it seemed like he was just this... He and the Orioles had their own little universe going on right this offseason. Everything else was happening with the outfield market. And the outfield market was, like, randomly after Hayward, like shrunk, like, like cockroaches when you turn the lights on. And I
really think he is holding up the market, because the Orioles would be a hypothetical player in the market if he doesn't sign with the Orioles.
Do you think the Orioles have said to like Upton or Cespedes, like, hey, if Davis says no, we've got 120 mil sitting here for you, 130 mil.
I don't know if they've explicitly said it, but it makes enough sense that given that they have the money out there and that they said, oh, we're going to take the money off from Davis, I'm sure they've had conversations with those guys, and I'm sure that there is an understanding. Like, agents are going to be like, oh, I'll take a 3-year deal for Upton right now when there's all this money tied up in Baltimore that might not, like, that might be there. Like, they're all waiting for that, because that Baltimore is the big wild card, really.
Davis going to go if he passes it up, though?
I mean, it doesn't, it all makes sense in theory, and then, like, that's what's so weird about all of this, is that none of it, like, it just makes sense for Davis to go to Baltimore, for Upton to go to the White Sox, and for Cespedes to go to the Tigers. Or, I mean, I don't want him to go there, but, like, that's how it would, like, that's how things fall into place. Like, that would make a ton of sense. But
or Cespedes goes to, like, the Cardinals or something.
Does not feel like a Cardinals player. But
no, but if the value drops enough, like, I could see them being like, well, you know, like,
yeah,
we'll move Holiday to first base.
I just feel like Upton feels more like a Cardinals player than Cespedes, but
I totally forgot the Orioles had Trumbo now.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
I totally forgot the Orioles had Trumbo. So, like, yeah, if I had Trumbo already, what's Davis's leverage? Like, who's out there?
The Pirates are actually going to spend money. I don't know. Maybe do the Mariners need a first baseman?
The Astros?
The Mariners have made like 100,000 deals. I know they have Adam Lind now.
The Mariners said they were done, and then Iwakuma failed his physical, and they were like, oh, okay, we'll bring him back. I mean, you know, you can say you're done and whatever, but like...
The Angels can sign another ridiculous contract to someone who doesn't fit.
I actually would... I think if the Astros signed Chris Davis, it would be really cool.
Nah, fuck the Astros.
I agree, but they'd be a really fun team.
Doesn't seem like their move either. Like, they don't seem like they're looking for I mean, they should.
The Mariners got Lind.
Yeah. And the...
Lind's a DH.
He can play first.
Chris Davis is a DH. Or a right fielder, apparently.
There's, like, nothing... I mean, the Rockies need a first baseman, but, like, they're not doing that.
That's the thing. They're kind of, you know, they're stupid. They'll do something crazy.
They're going to sign Gerardo Parra to 3 years.
To do what?
To trade their other outfielders. They're going to create a fault. They're going to create scarcity on the market.
What the fuck? That team makes the White Sox look like a bastion of smart baseball management. Like, they're the hottest pursuant of Gerardo Parra. Why?
Because they need a glove first, slap hitting outfielder who's versatile. You know, just ignore Charlie Blackman, Cargo, and Corey Dickerson. They need an outfielder, man.
What? Doesn't make any sense at all.
The Mariners presumably want to DH Nelson Cruz. So that's probably why they also have Cess Smith bouncing around.
I thought you just said Cess Smith, and I was like, what?
It's hard to say Cess Smith's name. Yes, this is true.
Seth Smith.
Smith.
Yeah, James didn't do choir when he was growing up, did he?
I was one of the few kids that didn't. Like, I went to a small school, like, 80% of the class did choir. The day they had, like, to go out singing, I just, like, sat in a room and read a book with my teacher.
That sounds great.
I thought so.
Reading in a choir room sounds really great.
I don't know why I was so eager to tell you that story.
It's really weird bouncing around these, like, depth charts and, like, just looking at who's playing... Where? And I'm like, yeah, where are the buyers for these things? Like, maybe if the Orioles have 100, that would explain everything else. Like, you have a really weird organization in the Orioles.
I honestly think that's what it is.
And a really stubborn agent in Boris who has overplayed his hand very prominently with a couple of guys recently in the form of.
It's also possible he's just being a dick to the other agents. I can make y'all wait.
Hey, Justin, look what I can do. You should assign with me, sort of thing.
I don't know.
Dent's agent is.
It was some guy who told Heyman that they wouldn't go a 1-year deal.
I mean, Larry Reynolds. Seems like a reasonable position, Larry.
Is that like Dave Stewart? That's such a boring name. I know Dave Stewart actually played baseball, but...
Oh, isn't there an agent called like Bean Stringfellow?
What?
Yeah, he's like... Bean Stringfellow is an agent... For like a pretty big one, I think.
In what sport?
Baseball. He's like.
There's a prominent NBA agent named Dan Fagan, which is my dad's name.
Bean Stringfellow is Jose Bautista and Irvin Santana's agent, for example, among others.
So he has that steroid connect.
Yeah, man. You don't get. I mean, what do you think? Bean is slang is like Laurie's.
I don't mean to connect Joey Bass to steroids, but that was presumptuous.
Or Jay Alou, I don't know. I can't. Anyway, that's it. Maybe it's like you got Dan Duquette, who is famous for being like not having a ton of people skills, and Scott Boras, who is like willing to play chicken with other people's careers, like unlike anyone in history.
I think he spent an entire hour just on outfield market conspiracy theories.
Dude, that's what the offseason is. Nothing has happened.
Dude, I think Scott Boras is part of the Illuminati. Mm. And he's going to.
He's a reptilian.
He's going to convince the Orioles to give him just the right amount of money. So he has that to put him over the edge so they can use the New World Order, or so they can fund the New World Order's latest brain laser scheme.
Dude, money is so passe. The Illuminati are interested in cadmium and cadmium only, and everyone knows that.
I think Upton would be in the Illuminati, and his interest in Chicago would be based on mishearing someone talking about Luminatis.
I also love the George Offen report. Justin Upton is very intrigued by the South Side of Chicago. What?
I've never heard of George Offman.
He's the score
that,
host.
Before that tweet. I'd never heard of him.
He's a score host, and I'm pretty sure all the score guys make fun of him for it. Is he a score host still?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's listed as that.
Oh, he has a nasally voice, right?
I don't know. He's on at odd hours.
So if where do you, like, aside from some spring training invites and some, like, 1-year scrap heap deals, whatever it is, let's say the roster is done. What do you guys think? How do you think the team does next year?
Not great. I don't know. Okay.
I think they, on a median, in terms of median percentile outcomes and in terms of win distribution outcomes, I think they look a lot like the 2015 Mets going in, but the Mets also hit a high percentile. Like, I'm not saying they have a median outcome of making the World Series.
And then hit the fucking lottery on the deadline.
Right. Yeah, they got bailed out on Gomez by their terrible ownership, and then, like, God.
Yeah, I think they're pretty similar to that team. They have very obvious flaws in certain places, but they also have very obvious studs, and they might have a better offense than that team. I mean,
they don't have a Conforto, but yeah.
Every team has a Conforto.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Sure, I forgot
If Jose Abreu is 2014 Jose Abreu, this is a whole different conversation too, and it's not impossible that Jose Abreu returns to being 2014 Jose Abreu. And then you got a really fucking fun team. But
yeah, I mean, like, I've also accepted the fact that, like, Avisail Garcia is terrible, but, like, let's say they even go into next year with Avisail Garcia. He could be better than last year.
He's scheduled for Sox Fest.
Yeah, that signals to me that they're not going to DFA him in spring training. They're not going to give him a die-in move.
Even though they declined Alexi's option and sent him on like a goodwill tour to Cuba.
It makes sense that he's wearing I think James pointed out that it makes sense that he's wearing a Sox jersey because, like,
what else is he going to do?
But yeah, like, he's just going to, everyone else is in their uniforms and he's just going to sit there and, like,
a three-piece suit? Like, what's he?
I'm sure he's got
Newsom Hotels t-shirt.
I'm sure Alexei does not listen to In the Aeroplane Over the Sea.
No, Alexei definitely prefers Steve Malkmus and the Jicks.
Alexei would wear like a Rihanna like mesh tank top.
Maybe Alexei is waiting to sign until Auntie finally drops because Rihanna's been holding that for way too long.
I presumably Alexei's waiting for whatever Desmond does, right?
Or Desmond. Apparently, he's talking with the Padres.
Well, yeah, the Padres need anybody who can pick
up a baseball. The Padres decided that their strategy of signing everyone that plays positions that they already have isn't good, so they just decided to sign no one this offseason.
Alexei, would you like your career to sink even deeper into obscurity? Come to San Diego.
Low-key has had, like, it's been a really solid player who's only made one or two All-Star teams. Like
Just one.
Like, been one of the more steady players, if not a great player, a steady player since 08. The best White Sox player since 08, other than Sale.
You know, and can you imagine, like, he comes over, he's 26, 2008 happens, he hits that grand slam to, like, send him to the playoffs. Send him to the game 163 and then go to the playoffs. He must have thought, like, man, like, great things are happening here.
Yeah, I thought great things were happening, too. I was just getting to high school.
7 years later.
Just getting to high school. And then high school happened. And the White Sox didn't make the playoffs. And then college happened. White Sox still haven't made the playoffs.
Yeah, Ken Griffey Jr. was on who was just voted into the Hall of Fame, was on that last team to make the playoffs with the White Sox.
Like, imagine Alexei's national profile if he was in San Francisco from 2008 on. Instead of Brandon Crawford.
And then he's next to Uribe, and they could just be cool like they were in 08. Even though wasn't Uribe kind of cut for Alexei? Like, not directly, but...
pretty much.
Didn't help him. Didn't help him, certainly.
I mean, they already pushed him off shortstop by bringing in Cabrera,
who was actually good that year, too.
Yeah, but really drove Joe Colley up the wall, apparently.
What doesn't drive Joe Colley up the wall?
I haven't heard that name in forever.
Because he got kind of like, well, he got kicked off Twitter for being a misogynist by the Sun Times.
What does he even do now?
He's the Bulls beat guy for the Sun Times, but
yeah, he's on the score sometimes. Like, even though Dan Bernstein very vocally talks negatively of some misogynists, he's also allowed to bring on Joe Colley all the time. And I like to burn bridges.
I mean, these bridges don't really exist, so.
I applied to baseball teams on applications. Maybe Joe Colley has ins with the White Sox still.
I'm skeptical of that.
Not if Ryan Zimmer knows what he's doing.
Also, yeah. I really don't think... I think I've burnt enough bridges with Ryan Zimmer that I wouldn't get hired by the White Sox if he listens to this podcast.
Just association with me probably isn't any good.
I've seen some pretty explicit anti-Reinsdorf comments too, but
yeah, same. I'm concerned about Yankees or Mets, given the things I've said, but certainly the Mets.
Do you want to work for the Mets?
They're local.
I don't know, just like. Working for an org where, like, you get an email, like, late on a Friday, like, paychecks might not be till next week. Like, it's like a,
yeah.
A dicey well, and, place.
Hey, Dave Podesta's gone. There's an opening.
They probably won't sexually harass me, so that's good.
Didn't someone get fired there for, like, wasn't there a lawsuit there?
Yeah, it was a woman who was, like, egregiously sexually harassed, and they settled for, like, millions of dollars. She was, I think she was pregnant and unmarried and, like, Wilpon made it like an agenda item every week to be like, women who are pregnant and aren't married are like subhuman. And she was like, hey, this feels unproductive and aimed at me. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then she sued him and she won pretty much. So
go figure on that.
Yeah, weird, right? Yeah. You treat somebody terribly and pass them over for
Did they have the money to pay her? Or did they just
I'm sure they gave her they offered her like minority Mets owners stakes instead. Which benefits like meet Mr. Met and like a couple of buckets of waffle fries.
Do you think they're gonna be paying her on prorated or on installments that are on very large interest rates until 2050 or something like that? A la Bobby Bonilla?
Something like that. It's I didn't mean to. I feel bad now that I was so glib about it, but it's like it's so bleak. The McCourts got forced out for less.
Jerry Reinsdorf made deals with the McCourts because he's a very stand-up owner.
Yeah, they partnered on that spring training complex, which
Jerry Reinsdorf
friends of ours have referred to as a disaster.
Jerry Reinsdorf also was real buddy-buddy with Donald Sterling until Donald Sterling stopped being all publicly okay.
I mean, I think I've been out to that spring training complex. Matt would have more to say about.
Well, I think I'm going to spring training this year.
It's not so much the complex itself as much like the way they like positioned it to where it doesn't compete well with the other newer complex that was built in a better location.
So is that like U.S. Cellular Field too? Because it's the same thing.
But like the Arizona, like all that stuff, even the quote remote locations are so much closer together than the freaking Florida ones.
That's probably why they moved away from there.
Yeah, I mean,
were they ever in Florida?
I mean,
everybody used to be in Florida.
I mean,
right?
Like, I mean, the league.
Oh, I didn't know. That's good. I've always thought of it as the Arizona Spring White Sox have always been the cast.
This is low key an Ethan Age fact. He doesn't really remember spring training in Florida being like.
No, I didn't know that. I literally thought the White Sox were always in Arizona. When were they in Florida?
I have no idea.
The 90s?
I just thought Florida had like a monopoly on spring training up until like 20 years ago.
Pretty much. Well,
I was the universe had a monopoly on me not existing up until 20 years ago.
Then the floodgates broke. Spalding children started flying out of the woodwork.
Did you see that conversation on Twitter where I tagged all my brothers with a conversation with, I think, Zach and maybe Craig?
All your brothers? Isn't the youngest one like 10?
14.
How many brothers do you have?
3.
Any sisters?
No.
He had like his Twitter photo for a month, just him and all his brothers. What?
I don't know who those dudes were.
Did you look at them? They're all just like Ethan clones, except for the one with hair.
Dude, I mean, just because your Twitter avatar is like a cartoon weasel doesn't mean that's what I think you are. I mean, let's.
But I was in front of a Christmas tree. Like, I don't take pictures with random younger people in front of a Christmas tree.
I thought those dudes might be like your boys. I don't know. They might be like, maybe that's the toughest guys at University of Wisconsin. I have no idea.
Why do we have a big-ass Christmas tree?
Because it's freaking December, man.
I wouldn't buy a Christmas tree with my own money. That's all my parents. They buy the Christmas tree in the house.
So wait, you couldn't have gone home and met up with a bunch of your high school friends who just kind of looked younger? No?
Isn't Ethan like the tallest guy in that photo? For you to like think...
Yeah,
I don't know how tall Ethan is.
I'm 5'9". No, I'm actually the shortest. My 14-year-old brother's taller than me.
I stand by my position that it was not conclusive.
I think it was inconclusive because there's only one other. James is familiar with the face, or I guess you're both Facebook friends with me. And James is talking about, like, in the Facebook picture, there's all three of them. But in the Twitter picture, I think it was just me and maybe one other face.
I just haven't really looked at your photos that extensively, Ethan. I'm sorry.
Now mine is me in the hoodie.
I will. I'm going to do some research for the next podcast.
James did all this research for blackmail in our group text with Mao.
Well, I don't know. Here's a photo of you with some dude with like a weird headband thing.
That's my profile picture.
I don't assume you're related.
Well, no, because It's not in front of. It's not a Christmas card picture. This podcast is really. Are we still recording?
Oh yeah. I haven't had time to like throw out the factoid that Mao threw the physical comp of young jacked Bernie Sanders on Ethan.
What? When did that? What?
He said, "With your hairline and your height, he just thinks
young,
you're a buff Bernie Sanders if he was young."
We haven't talked about baseball in a good 15 minutes.
Well, neither have any of the GMs, apparently.
No, everyone's talking. Well, if you look at Twitter, everyone's talking about either. There's still people angry about snacks on baseball Twitter, and then there are football tweets that I don't care about. I forgot. I learned today that Clemson is in the ACC, not the SEC. I thought they were both in the SEC.
That's not really an essential factoid. I don't know. It's a South.
Yeah, it's kind of. At least in terms of college football, the South is kind of homogenous. They get so angry if I heard they heard me say that.
The knives are out, but who cares?
What's the Venn diagram of huge college football fans in the South and White Sox people who are listening to this podcast?
I know one of my friends who listens to this podcast is he's an Alabama fan. I think he's at the game right now.
That just seems like being a college football like Yankees fan. I don't know.
His sister goes to Alabama.
That's my buddy, sister has my been to like, New York.
I have a good friend who's like in the administration at Alabama. Still can't be bothered. I was in his wedding.
I could have gotten a full scholarship to Alabama if I wanted to be an engineer, but I didn't want to be an engineer at Alabama.
You couldn't bait and switch. You couldn't be like, I totally want to be an engineer, and then you show up and you're like, wait a minute, the theater bug has bit.
Well, I'd still be stuck at Alabama.
Well, that's your risk if you sign Justin Upton to an 8-year deal, is that he pulls that on you.
I want to be a pitcher.
This is so weird. The Rockies are one of, quote, three finalists for Gerardo Parra. Three finalists.
Who are the finalists? Why did I just turn on my toothbrush? Damn it.
That's it. As soon as I mentioned Gerardo Parra, James just freaks out, starts cleaning his teeth.
Yo, I always forget that Gerardo Parra and Martin Prado are separate people.
Ooh. Like,
I totally forgot that Gerardo Parra, like, every time I look at Gerardo Parra's stats, I assume he played on the Braves. Because Martin Prado did. Because they both had one year that they had, were like, crazy overvalued 5-win Fangraphs players because they had really good defensive corner years in, and they're like very slightly above average hitters.
Diamondbacks thing.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks thing, and like they weren't Justin Upton, and they were the kind of guys that were described as grinders because Justin Upton wasn't a grinder. Because I wonder why Justin Upton's not a grinder, but because he's
not a sandwich.
What? Is a grinder a sandwich in New York? Is that a New York thing?
How often do five tool guys who were like number one overall draft picks get called grinders?
No, never. Harold Baines?
I don't think Harold Baines is very five tool. No, I never watched Harold Baines play a baseball game.
Yeah, I would say probably not.
It's guy, I just consider that he's a DH.
Is it
like
weird?
A long time.
Am I weird for being confused that like that Gerardo Parra is getting like a 3-year deal and Deaza got like a 1-year deal and everyone's furious? Is that weird?
The problem is they're putting Deaza in center field.
Yeah, but I know that's a problem. But like, it's not very clear to me that Parra is like a better player than Deaza.
I don't think they'd be. I mean, I think the reason the Met fans were mad.
Yes,
wouldn't necessarily be quelled by Gerardo Parra either.
Also, Parra is only 28. He's young-ish.
Yeah, but when Deaza was 28, he hit better than Parra did.
But you're not signing.
He hit better than him at 31 too.
Deaza is like strange. Like for someone who's been like DFA'd and like traded for nothing, he's like a pretty okay player. Like, didn't the Red Sox just cut him?
I thought they traded him to San Fran.
And then he had 387 OPP for San Francisco for 75 PAs.
but it wasn't an even year, so.
No.
Oh, no, the Orioles DFA'd him. And then he went to the Red Sox. And then he was good with the Red Sox.
And then he was good with San Francisco, too.
He is, until Eaton and Abreu pass him this year, I'm pretty sure he is the White Sox second most valuable player, third most valuable position in player since 08. Or something like that.
He's just been, I think part of his glove is better, but he's better bat than, it's just like, yeah, I can see why you'd prefer one to the other, but like the idea that.
Right. No, I see what you're saying. Do you remember that game in 2012 that was the Tigers-White Sox game that was Sale, Verlander, and Deaza led it off with a leadoff home run and everything looked great and then the rest of the season was terrible?
Like when he first got called up.
No. No, that I'm talking 2012. Oh, 2012, okay. He was the start leadoff hitter all year, which weird because he never was a leadoff hitter type. But yeah.
So Ethan, now that you play What If Sports, the best, like two of my favorite bench seasons ever are Deaza, like 2011 as a bench season, and Charles Johnson 2000, like stub year with the White Sox. That was so good.
You know, Maglio's 07 year right now is just absolutely murking for my What If Sports team.
Well, I'm doomed because of Bob Shabazz.
Bob's got a really good team. My team is somehow in third place in my division.
Yeah, that was weird.
Behind fucking Kevin Brown and his sexless self.
All I know is Carlos Carrasco is an ERA of 1.4.
And this is getting even more esoteric than Bernie Sanders' body comps.
All right, I think I'm going to call it for me.
All right.
So if they sign Fowler, they might make the playoffs. If they sign Justin Upton, they win the World Series. Is that where we're at?
White Sox Cubs World Series.
That'll be a gentleman's sweep.
Chris Sale is so much better than Jake Arrieta.
That's what they said in 1906, isn't it?
Yeah, and the 1906 White Sox, they didn't put their ace in the first game because they knew that they would lose the first game no matter what, so they put their ace in the second game. So the White Sox will put Quintana against Arrieta and Sale against Lester.
Why don't you just put Eric Johnson versus Arrieta at that point?
Remember when Arrieta had a three-run homer off Quintana?
Yes, I do.
Arrieta's really cool. Chris Sale's, like, better than him, though. And Kanye's better than the Beatles.
My wish for 2016 is to meet the Royals in the ALCS and infuriate their fan base with, like, a John Danks 8 shutout innings and, like, like a game 5.
That would be great. And then it'd be even better if they, like, if the White Sox brought in, like, Bruce Chan on a minor league deal and then, like, used him as, like, let's say somebody gets knocked out in, like, the third inning. They bring in Bruce Chan as a mop-up, and then they rally off of the Royals' bullpen. No,
what John Danks has to do, because the Royals fans hate John Danks. Like, we hate Ryan Raver.
Well, because Danks, like, the Royals are predicated on what if your strikeout pitchers can't strike us out? And then it's a counterpoint, what if John Danks can't strike anyone out? What if our pitcher isn't supplying all the velocity for your crappy hitters to, like, doink over the infielders? Okay. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
This is a terrible podcast.
We always say that.
Yeah, but we went 30 minutes without talking about baseball.
Stop with the self-deprecating nonsense. We are geniuses in our time.
I'm Bernie Sanders with more muscle.
James, what am I then?
Hillary? I don't know.
You're Ted Cruz.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I'm done. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm Alex Jones.
So does that make James like Milo Yiannopoulos or whatever?
Oh, great.
You had your chance to say something nice. You declined.
How many people that listen to our podcast are going to get any of the last, like, any of these references?
You always, like, say, like, all these, no one in the podcast is going to pick up on this or even listen to this point. But like,
Ethan, you were the one saying everybody loves this podcast.
I said that before we were recording. My bit is that I don't like it while we're recording.
Oh, my bad.
Jeez, Nick.
Edit this. Fix it in post.
I'm just going to slap it up there.
Make me talk like, and also make me talk like Kylo Ren in a mask this whole time.
I haven't seen the movie yet.
It's good.
Kylo Ren has a mask. I just spoiled the whole movie.
He takes his mask off, though, and he's not emo in the movie.
No, it's a good movie.
I might see it tomorrow night because my wife is out of town and she hasn't seen the originals, so.
Dude, go see Star Wars, smuggle booze into the theater, you're going to have a great time.
Okay.
Do you see Star Wars?
Thoughts? No, she's not listening. All right. Good night, guys.
All right. Night.